We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That, of course, is assuming that he comes in and plays. If negotiations break down and the team says, you know what, we were unable, George was too high, we were too low, George is going to have to play out this year under his contract, maybe George Kittle doesn't want to play this year. He sits it out, and then next year he goes as a free agent and plays somewhere else. So there is some risk there from the team standpoint, but the idea of the tag, and again, Lo, not that they're using it, I'm sure they haven't even mentioned it in negotiations with Kittle's agent, but both sides know it's out there. It's like when you had your dad. My dad had a paddle that he kept in his top drawer. At times it was a ping pong paddle. At times it was one of those paddle ball paddles. But you knew it was there. He didn't bring the paddle out much. But you knew, Lo, you knew that if you crossed a certain line, the paddle was coming out and you were going to be on the receiving end of the paddle. Now, I never saw the paddle because I was the good child. Shout out my three siblings who were monsters. But you knew the paddle was in there. And this is like the 49. Thank you, Gail. Yeah. Yes, Whitey?
The question is, who has the paddle in this situation? Kittle or the 49ers? Who's got the paddle ultimately?
The 49ers have the paddle, and the paddle is the franchise tag. And they don't need to whip it out because ultimately they can go to George Kittle's agent and say, huh, your client's under contract here for year four, and he's going to make $2 million or so. We'll see at camp, George. And that's the paddle. The paddle is, hey, you're under contract, and we got the franchise tag. Now, we're not going to use it because we love you, George. You're a good kid. We don't want to paddle you with the franchise tag, but just know it's in there, so behave. And by the way, we're willing to give you more than $12 million a season if you'll just sign here and initial here.
But I got my own paddle, don't I, Lo? If I'm George Kittle or his agent, I got my own paddle. We're going to skip this COVID year, and then you're not going to have me on your team this year. So I got my own paddle that I don't want to bring it out, but you're going to show me your paddle. I think my paddle's bigger.
I think his paddle is pretty big because, yeah, my dad used to say, it'd be Glenn, and say, you know what? We had switches and belts. And dad would say, you know what, give your heart to Jesus and give your behind to me because I'm getting you. So when that happens, it was all over. I think that, you know, Niners got to give their heart and give their behind because when you look at where Kittle is at in this Dibs, you're absolutely right. Yes, the Niners have a paddle, but Kittle's may be a little bit bigger because his can be long term and the long term effect he could have on this organization.
Bigger paddle.
I'll bring it back to my family, and my sister who's listening is going to love this, Hurricane Gail, because Hurricane Gail, her go-to was she's going to run away from home, which is kind of what George Kittle would be doing in the scenario if he says, I'm out, I'm not going to play anymore. And so Gail would run away from home all the time. The first time I remember, I went in my room and I cried. I cried and cried and cried because she was gone. Like, oh, my sister, she ran away from home. Come to find out, you know, about an hour after dinner, here comes Gail, and she's back home. And next time something would happen, Gail's going to run away from home. Second time, I cried a little bit less, Lo. I still was sad because I was only about 9 years old, and I didn't fully understand what was going on. And then Gail would come back. By the third, fourth, not five, not six, not seven, by the 30th time that Gail, quote, ran away from home, you kind of got desensitized to it. And so you realized, Gail's going to be coming back. And then she moves to Tahoe with her boyfriend, but that's neither here nor there. Point being, yes, shout out Hurricane Gail.
What was his name? What was the boyfriend's name?
I think that was Steve. Steve. Not to be mistaken with Billy Hamilton. Not that Billy Hamilton, but another Billy Hamilton who used to work at Sambo's, Lo. We've talked about Sambo's before. Yeah. And never missed their breakfast, the blue plate on Wednesday.
Oh, their breakfast was, oh.
That's about three diversions right there. Point being, yeah. Whitey, if George Kittle wants to, quote, run away from home, that would hurt the Niners, and Jed York, like myself, would probably cry. But it's next man up, and they'd have to move on.
Really, though, there is no next man up. Take it not from me, but from Raheem Mostert, right? Raheem Mostert yesterday met with the media, and Raheem Mostert talked about how happy he is that they have his situation settled. Lowe's, of course, 100% right. You can't compare the two, except that the 49ers, whether it's Mostert, Kittle, they're trying to make sure they all achieve the same goal. Here's Raheem Mostert on how vital it is to him and to the 49ers to go all the way this year.
We've seen all the different sayings and stuff like that of how, you know, a team doesn't make it back to the Super Bowl, you know, the following year. We don't care nothing about that. Just like I think George emphasized it in the Super Bowl, you know, he will be back. I think that was everyone's mentality, you know. I feel like we're going to be back this year, and we're actually going to win it. That's our goal. That's our mindset. We don't care what happened in the past. The past is the past, and we're going to move on, and we're going to dominate this game the way we know how to. So the energy right now is just crazy.
Dibs, I'm a guest here. Is there anyone on the show who was on a team that went to the Super Bowl, lost the Super Bowl, and then didn't make it back the next year?
Man, I know Stephen Langford was a holder on a team that was a wild card contender, and our producer, John Curley, my man. Yeah. I don't think that that his team ever made it, but Lowe, and that leaves us with Lowe. I think O'Neal. Lowe? This thing on, Lowe? You still with us, Lowe? Or did you run away from home like Hurricane Gale in 1976?
I'm running away. I mean, why do you come on the show and this is what you want to throw?
It's a fair question. Is
it a fair question?
That's a great question, Whitey.
We're talking about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl. What do you want Dibs and I to talk about how hard it is to get back to the Super Bowl?
You're throwing stones. You know how you set that up.
Hey, is there a guy that on the show that knows what it's like to be at the Super Bowl and not get back to the show? Pretty much.
I give your Whitey three cries right there. Three cries for your Whitey. Really good Whitey.
Whitey. We went to the Super Bowl, and the next year we didn't go. But to what Mostert was saying, we came back believing we were going to go. Jeff Fisher, when we left, he said, "Except when we lost that Super Bowl by 1 yard against the Rams, we're in the locker room." And he said, "A setback is nothing but a setup for a comeback. Remember this feeling, guys." And we came back with fire, with vigor, and with a will and determination, Dibs, to get back.
Only five teams ever have lost the Super Bowl and gone back to the Super Bowl the subsequent year. And you know, Lowe, three of those were the Buffalo Bills. And the Patriots actually were a team that went back and won it. So only five times in the history of the NFL. So I love Raheem Mostert's enthusiasm, and I'm encouraged by the positivity in the message. But it's a tall, tall order historically to be the Super Bowl loser and then make it back to the big game.
It is, and he's right. But the biggest thing with me, I believe coaching lost that game. Al Decro, you go look it up, Whitey. We got chip shot. It's a 25-yard field goal. This dude,
I was trying to look it up. I couldn't find Al Del Greco anywhere.
And he got blocked, and it was a kick, block, and not just block, but they scored. So that's a 10-point swing. We should. That's a game we should. And I think coaches, they got afraid of Baltimore. We knew that was going to be the Super Bowl. Baltimore ended up motorboating, winning the Super Bowl, running away with that. That was the Super Bowl. We knew we beat Baltimore winning the Super Bowl. And we should. And I'm telling you, if you watch the game, I can show you some points. We should have won that. So my point that I'm making, Raheem Mostert's not wrong for saying that. If you have, and we still had our team coming back, everyone pretty much came back. We should have won that. We had the team. We came up a little bit short against Baltimore. Game could have went anyway, either way. A blocked field goal. Shannon Sharp catches it. He's playing tight end. Longest receiving yards. He had like an 80-yard reception for a tight end for him. No, that doesn't happen. Just a break. Dude, we should have won that game. So my point is, I'm getting all frustrated right now. I'm getting frustrated. I'm having flashbacks. But
I can't imagine why, Lowe. It was January 8th, 2001. Al Del Greco's field goal attempt blocked by Keith Washington. And the second one was returned 90 yards for a touchdown. The 38-year-old Del Greco missed on a 31-yard field goal attempt as well. And unfortunately, it was Baltimore 24 and the Titans 10.
We'll get back to it, Lo. We'll give you a chance to cool down. Yeah, thank you, Dibs, for illuminating what exactly went down then. Coming up, Farhan explains why Bart doesn't stop at Oracle Park. And Simmons on Steph, brilliance or blasphemy? That's next on the 95.7 Morning Show with Whitey, Lo, and Dibs. 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
95.7 Morning Show, Whitey, Lo, and Dibs. Where the heck is Joey Bart? Yesterday, Farhan was on Damon Radokolsky. He addressed that. We have that for you in just a moment here on 95.7 The Game. But first, and I almost feel responsible for this in a way. We were just talking about Raheem Mostert and the 49ers having a really healthy debate about football and George Kittle, and we started talking about these Super Bowl hangovers, of course, and Dibs never played for a team that went to the Super Bowl and didn't get back the next year. I didn't. So we asked Lo Neal, and he bristled. He fairly bristled. He didn't take it well, and I'm just not sure where we go from here. On the text line, 888-957-9570, from the 707, calm down, Dibber Claws. Lo loses Super Bowls, you lose golf clubs. You're not even in the same league. You're out of line. Stay in your lane. That's Hutch from the 707. I don't know what's going on
here, Hutch.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about, Hutchie. And in fact, I didn't lose my golf clubs. They were stolen. And Lowe's return to the Super Bowl wasn't stolen.
It was stolen.
In fact, it was not stolen. You should have talked to your teammates about the fact that special teams counts for a third. Because Whitey Lowe's taught me a long time ago, offense counts a third, defense counts a third, special teams counts as a third. And what's the deal with your field goal protect when you have Del Greco, one of the greatest kickers, by the way, in Houston/Tennessee history. He had not one, but two kicks blocked. I mean, we're going to put this on Del Greco. Yes, he missed
shook.
A third.
No, he was shook. He was shook, bro. Honestly, he was shook. The kick came out, and when he got blocked, it came out low. He was trying to drive it. And like he was just one of those things. He was a sure kicker. When he was in, and that was just one of them days where he was just like on the sideline, and you looked in his, he sat on the sideline after that, and just was just, that's 10, that's, instead of adding three, so you look at the score, instead of add three to
it's
us,
a 10 point
take
turnaround.
Off seven, yes! Think of, I mean, and then he missed
well,
two
hold on,
others.
Hold on, three minus seven, carry the two.
Dibs, don't do this. Well so it was just, it was one of them days where he just had a bad day. Whitey, you've had a lot of bad days. Not one or two. You've had a lot, okay?
Two this week, in fact.
At least. Yeah. Lo, what's the answer to the question?
What,
we don't
Whitey?
Know. We
what?
Didn't play in the NFL. What is a Super Bowl hangover? Is it a thing? Is a Super Bowl hangover a thing as someone who may or may not have experienced it? And I say this with the utmost respect and affection. What is it?
As you're like, as you're holding your hands up, as you're giving me all this, I say with the utmost respect. No, I don't think it is. Honestly, really, I really believe we were focused. You look at the year, Dibs, I know you have it up. It wasn't like we had a bad year. We had a bye. We're in a good situation. And we just came up short. And you're right. Del Greco, we shouldn't have put him in that position. You know what? If we would have ran the ball, maybe, or threw the ball, got a touchdown, and now we're not kicking the field goal. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. So I don't count that as a hangover. So I look at the Niners, and you think about what they have. Mm-hmm. You know what? They got a good field goal kicker. You know what? And people say, oh, well, it doesn't come down. Sometimes it does come down to a kicker.
Sure.
Look at Vinatieri became a god in New England because of his field goal kicking, what he was able to do for that team to catapult him to win Super Bowls. So it was just one of those things. So is there a hangover? And people look at it like that. But if you're a good team, you can get back. Seattle had a chance to get back. You remember that, Dibs? And, if they run the ball, we came in talking about if they run the ball, was it a hangover? Was that a hangover if they would have just ran the ball?
It may not have been a hangover for you, but I'm sure you felt like it. You felt sick to your stomach, dehydrated with a headache.
Sick.
Because
the woozy.
Look at the team they lost to, Whitey. Trent Dilfer led the Ravens to victory. And this is no disrespect to Fresno State, but Trent Dilfer in that game, 5 for 16 for 117 in a win. And also, you figure they must have destroyed Tennessee.
That was like
they must
the
have
Niners
destroyed you on the ground.
You're right, Dibs.
Jamal Lewis.
You give me those numbers, Dibs. You give me those Dilfer numbers. I'm thinking, wow, that's an easy Tennessee win. Tennessee wins easily in that game.
Well, then you figure like that Baltimore Niners must have pounded them on the ground. Jamal Lewis, 17 carries for 47 yards.
Wow.
That's
we were
it.
Killing. Thank you.
Killing them.
This is why I'm sick. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. This is why I'm sick. Keep
Eddie
going.
George goes 27 totes for 91 on the ground. Steve McNair, 24 for 46, 176 yards. He did throw the one pick, but game was 10-10, fourth quarter, and then Anthony Mitchell, 90-yard blocked field goal return. Then Ray Lewis, old Ray, friend of the program, actually a good friend of mine, as luck will have it, a 50-yard pick six to seal it. Baltimore 24, low kneel, Super Bowl hangover.
Okay,
so what
give
do you
the
think,
one catch,
Dibs?
One catch, the one catch, Dibs. Give me the pull up. The, well, he's on this. I'm hot now. You know, pull up the one reception to Horsehead. The one the sharp has got the head. I call him Horsehead. Everyone calls him that.
You're Tell me talking about reception. The one reception catch. For Horsehead, 56 yards.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So
one
take
catch
56
for
56. Yards.
56.
So take that 56 off of 117. Look where he's at.
Huh.
He didn't have 4 for 61 is what he had left.
Thank you. You see what I'm saying, Whitey? And do we beat him every which way? Make a couple foot, dude. So was that a hangover to you? And look at I don't know.
Maybe it's just really hard to get there, and then you know
it's just hard to get there.
Yeah,
it's just hard
and
to
then,
get there.
We were looking for something to explain why a team that was there doesn't get back, Dibs. I don't know. What do you think, Dibs? Maybe I should have just asked you in the first place.
Yeah, maybe you should
have. Saved everybody a lot of grief. But what do you think a Super Bowl hangover is?
Before I answer, I do just want to point out that Del Greco missed from 45, 41, and 37 in that game, two of which were blocked. So one of four kicking the ball for ADG, FGM, field goal missed by ADG.
Okay,
yes, there
stop.
Is a... There is a Super Bowl hangover, without a doubt, and you go all the way, and I think you're going to see it with the 49ers, especially because they had that game. That game was the 49ers game.
Yeah.
They had it in hand. What was it, a 91 or 92% win probability?
Yeah.
If you make any number, if you make one of three or four plays you had to make, there was the deep ball that Kansas City hit on. Jimmy G misses Emmanuel Sanders. You had a drop in that sequence as well. There's so many plays that if you just
third
made
and 15,
one of them,
they let him they let him convert a third and 15. Remember they let him convert? Let Mahomes convert a third and 15. Right.
So I don't think the 49ers are going to have an easy time getting over it. I mean, here we are August 6th, and we're still talking about it. So you think the 49ers don't have that in the back of their head? I think there's absolutely a Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah, there's losing a Super Bowl or a game that you need to win on your way to the Super Bowl, and then there's having those ones where, you know, it's the worst for the players, coaches, and certainly fans where you think you have it. We have this one. We've won this game. And then your heart is ripped out of your chest and held before you, still beating, and you lose. So obviously it's not going to be easy to see how the 49ers deal with that. As for the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, biggest question Giants fans grind their teeth over these days, where's Joey Bart? Why isn't he with the big club? Yesterday, Farhan Zaidi appeared on Damon Radokolsky, and here's why Farhan answered. He said, it's simple. Joey Bart isn't ready yet.
We went into spring training this year thinking this is a guy who we're very high on as an organization, but who has had less than 100 at-bats above A ball. You know, not his own fault. A lot of it was a couple of unfortunate injuries he had last year. But we felt very strongly that he's a guy who needed more minor league reps. I mean, the ability to handle major league pitching on a day-in, day-out basis is a huge challenge, and a lot of guys get rushed and struggled, and they never get over that hump. So for somebody like him who's so important to the future of this organization, we want to make sure that we push the button at the right time. And for us collectively, you know, less than 100 at-bats above A-ball, I mean, there are very few cases of guys that make that jump and just come up to the big leagues and hit the ground running.
I understand why Giant fans are impatient, but to me, what Farhan had to say there, it makes perfect sense.
Yes, and it especially when you look at last year and the fact that it was, you know, fewer than 100 at-bats above single A, and he had the broken hand, which obviously kind of delayed the timetable somewhat. I just think about this in terms of a, quote, normal year? If this would have started in late March, early April, and you would have played 162 games, Joey Bart would be with the club by now, but he would have had 60, 70, 90 games of AAA baseball down in Sacramento where he could have gone through the rigors of handling a pitching staff and hitting AAA pitching and really becoming much more major league ready. And without that low, I think the two words that Farhan used really resonated with me, rush and struggle. You don't want to rush him and then have him struggle. It's like a quarterback. If you throw a rook in there and he's clearly overwhelmed and he plays three or four games and then you pull him, how much does that affect his confidence the next time you want him in there?
Right. My question to you guys, to you two, what would he give you? So right now, by having Joey Bart up there, besides getting a look at him, what is he good at? What do you guys, how do you guys view this young prospect, understanding he's going to be, could be the face and could be the future of this team? He's going to be a phenomenal catcher in time. But right now, what would you be looking to see? What are some of the attributes or some of the things you want to see for you guys' eye test if he was brought up?
No catcher's interferences. That's at the top of my list, Dibs.
Nice.
No more catcher's interference. Yeah.
That's pretty easy to do. According to Dibs, that's pretty easy to do.
It's extremely rare. I think if you brought up Joey Bart, the first thing you'd be looking for is how does he hit left-hand pitching? As a right-hand bat, you're going to look to see if he can feast a little bit. And he's got some good power that he showed in the first spring training, so you'd look for that primarily. Then you'd try to see how he does against righties. But the most overriding concern is how does he handle the pitching staff? Because you can bring him up and play him at first base, but you've got other guys up here who are playing first base. So it's not like you necessarily need someone. Now, if he comes up and he can hit left-hand pitching, maybe you have him platoon with Brandon Belt over at first base. He's your right-hand side of that platoon. But what Farhan was telling us is that they don't think that he's ready. And if he's not ready, you don't want to have him up and struggle. And you also don't want to bring him up and have him sit because that does him no good either.
No good. No good.
So, yeah. But he brings him up and have him sit. You're absolutely right, Dibs, if he comes up and sits. But he also talked about, you know, different guys that are catching. Look at Trump, and he said, hey, these guys are in this conversation. So he didn't dismiss them. And he said because of Posey set out, it helped this team. He think to find out other guys, you got to see who they are and what they can do. So with that being said, if he's at first base, because maybe he's not better a catcher than these cats right now. So is it a situation that if he's not better at catching, do you guys still look at him and say, would he give you more hitting ability than Brandon? Could he play first base? Because you look at the catchers that they have, and he's talking about, hey, one of the guys you talked about, Dibs, who you love, you know, he's already got two homers. So is he going to be a guy that you want to sit? Would you rather keep him at playing there and have them rotate and move the young prospect to first base?
Yeah, I think when you talk about Chadwick Trump, and that's who you were referring to, and
yes,
I just punched it up. You look at his career. He started as an 18-year-old playing rookie ball, and he's got experience at single-A, double-A, triple-A, Arizona Fall League. And now, as a 25-year-old, this is his eighth year of professional baseball, and now he's ready to go in the major leagues. Now, Joey Bart is a far better player than Chadwick Trump is, but Trump has that huge, huge amount of experience. He had about a half a year in single A that was beset by injury, and then he had less than 100 at-bats at triple A, so he's not even close to ready with the same level of experience.
Yeah, Trump is another one of those guys that Farhan plucked from another organization, right, Dibs? I think he was most recently in the Reds organization, and so far he's playing well. But the question becomes, Joey Bart, okay, if he's not with the big club, which he's not, then what is he doing in Sacramento? Some have suggested that, in Sacramento, they're just playing glorified grab ass. But Farhan addressed that yesterday on Damon Radokolsky. What is Joey Bart doing right now?
You know, there isn't a minor league season right now. But we feel really good about the setup we have in Sacramento. If you look at the pitchers that we have there, they're all basically major league depth. We have some quality depth in the organization, and he's getting to face those pitchers on a day-in, day-out basis. And frankly, however people want to describe the alternate sites that we have, you know, Joey Bart until now has never even faced that kind of Triple A major league quality pitching on a day in, day out basis. So we're watching his at bats very carefully. As has been reported, he's working out at first base as well. And that additional bit of defensive versatility is going to help us get him in the lineup as well. So those are all kind of continuing parts of his development, and we're continuing to evaluate it. We haven't, set timelines, either saying we can't do it until X date or we have to do it by a certain date. We're just continuing to evaluate it, and the reports out of there have been really good so far on what he's done.
So it comes down to this for Joey Bart. How is he best served in terms of his development? From what Farhan says right there, it's clear that he's getting more reps and more of an opportunity to develop as a player in Sacramento than he would at the major league level. It's simple.
Yeah, and it's, you know, simulated games, and it's just whatever execution they're doing in Sacramento as opposed to the bright lights of Major League Baseball pitching and the pressures of being out there, of being in the show. Because no matter when Joey Bart comes up, and I've said all along, Whitey, I estimated it would be 30 games on the Major League club. So he still has got another 18 games, in my opinion, where you get him some seasoning in those simulated games down in Sacramento, that extended camp at the Slap and Tickle Arena, or you glorified grab ass, GGA, as you like to call it. You will see Joey Bart this year. It's just not going to be immediately.
I tell you what I took away from that interview, listening to Farhan. He said, once he's getting more at-bats, he's getting more at-bats now with pitchers that he hasn't seen that are far more better talent than he's seen thus far. So that's one. And he said he's working at first base. So what I took away from that, they are not interested right now. It's not pressing for them to see him at catching. So here's a guy that you think is going to be for, you know, the predecessor for Posey. But if you listen to Farhan and listen to what he's saying, he wants to see what he's going to do at bat and at first base. So I think that lets you know that they're pretty satisfied dibs at just right now with catching.
Yeah, and you've got the lineup out, by the way. It's officially out, and it is the righty-heavy lineup, as we talked about. Austin Slater will lead it off. Wilmer Flores batting second. Donnie Barrels, Whitey, your guy. Donovan Solano will hit third and play shortstop. Evan Longoria will play third and bat fourth, and it's Hunter Pence out in right field. He with the 0.038 batting average, and as I mentioned low, Darren Ruff, your right-hand hitting DH, he will bat sixth. Then it's the Panda playing first. Switch hitter, he'll, of course, hit righty. Chadwick Tromp doing the catching, and Mauricio Dubon will be batting ninth in center field.
Big ball game today. I mean, if you're clinging to any hope that this team can do anything this year and stay relevant as long as they can, big ball game as you get ready to head into L.A. and Houston to play the Dodgers and the Astros.
And, yeah, Lo, this lineup tells you all you need to know about how they're approaching it, because the one name you didn't see in there is the best hitter on the team, and that's Mike Yastrzemski. It's because he bats left, and with the Rockies going with a left-hand starter, even though Yaz leads the team with three home runs, and he was leading baseball in on-base percentage, he's been by far your best hitter. Because you're so platoon dependent, you're not even thinking about throwing the lefty in against the lefty. Now, can he pinch hit?
See, I don't like that. I don't like that, though, Dibs. You know what I'm saying? That's that one that with the analytics. That's the one with analytics. I'm like, okay, I get it. But here's a guy that's got a good eye. He can hit right. He can hit lefty. And this is where this is one, Dibs, that I'm just like, sometimes it just chaps my, you know what?
It's clipboard. It's team clip. And that's when we talked earlier about, you know, the senses. Formula. It's not so much the eye test. It's, you know, it's what does the math tell you? And you look at, and I don't have the exact numbers on Yaz versus, let's see if I can punch that up. Oh, yeah, Yaz Freeland. Has, he's 0-2 lifetime against Freeland. So that's not really a good
ownage
sample
ownage.
Size. But, yeah, ownage is ownage.
God,
I got to tell you.
Really?
He's got him. He
Whitey,
him.
Come on.
But, Lo, it's like, it's like, you know, you talk about the times when, you know, they wouldn't play you. They would go away from 21 personnel, even though you probably should. And even though you guys are running hot, sometimes they go away from it. Yaz is playing great. He's hitting great. But you got to stick to what you're doing. Your approach is you play the righties against the lefty. Here comes your righty order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Belt with a home run. You'd think, hey, Belt's heating up. Get him in the lineup. Not today.
No.
So who's going to be DH, Dibs? Do you think it's going to be Yaz against him or Belt? Do
Darren Ruff. Oh, you mean pinch
Darren
hitter.
Ruff.
Yeah, pinch.
Yeah.
Pinch.
It depends on the
matchup. If you go into a pinch hitter, again, it's going to come down to the matchups, and it's going to come down to who's done what. Brandon Belt's had 19 at-bats against Kyle Freeland, and he's hitting 158. So depending on who the reliever is who comes in, if Belt has the ownage, then you go to Belt. If not, maybe you go to Yaz.
Why aren't you managing the Giants, Dibs? Huh?
Because I don't have a high enough level of mathematics, Whitey. I can look at things like batting average, and I can tell you what that means. I got to tell you, but you get deeper into all the analytics, and you start to lose
BABIP
me a little
and
bit.
FIP,
FIP,
VORP,
WOBA, and all that other stuff.
What was that one? What was
WOBA,
that last one?
Weighted WOBA. On base average. WOBA.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like
I think WOBA was a character in the second Star Wars movie. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
WOBA Juan Kenobi.
I remember.
If that would have been around when you guys were around, that would have been one of you guys' media, your weather name. WOBA. I'm WOBA. And let me tell
Willy
you the
WOBA.
Weather and traffic.
That's good. Check traffic with Willy WOBA. I'll tell you what, 280 is a mess out this morning. We got a three-car conundrum.
You never know what the future holds. I'm going to write that one down. I may need that one down the road.
Now with as weather, it's Billy Babip.
As we head down the home stretch here, 95.7 Morning Show, Whitey Lowe and Dibs, I wanted to see what you guys thought of what Bill Simmons had to say about Steph Curry, blasphemy or brilliance. Now, let's keep an open mind because he's talking about Dalla Dame from Oakland. Bill Simmons on his podcast says, Dame, I don't know where he is on the top 10 players in the league list and what the qualifications are, but is Curry better than him at this point? Ryan Russillo doing the podcast with Bill Simmons says, oh, come on, let's take it easy. Don't do this when Curry's missed a year. Simmons, I'm not talking about career. I'm not talking playoff chops or stuff like that. I'm just talking game to game. The stuff Dame is doing now consistently reminds me of Curry. I feel like he's money. He's in the top 8 or 9 for me now, and I don't know what the list is, but I think he's great, end quote. Now, it's a podcast, and he's given an opinion. You know, of course, that's how those things work, but suggesting Dame Dalla may be better than Steph Curry right now, blasphemy or brilliance, Dibs, from Bill Simmons?
It's blasphemy, and it's low-hanging fruit because Steph Curry hasn't played. He's played, what, 2 games over the course of a year, and now he won't play again until December. So right now, yes, right now in this very moment when Dame Dalla is going off inside the bubble and Steph Curry's working on his gap wedge and, you know, raising 3 kids, of course, right now, Dame Dalla is better. Now, when the season resumes again and Steph and the Warriors are back on the floor and, you know, they're able to resume basketball activity, then it's a real interesting question. And that's why I think it's blasphemy.
I agree with you. It's just dumb. It's short-sighted. There's a better way to point out, hey, Dame Lillard is playing great right now. He was playing probably better even before they went into the bubble, but dropping the, geez, he better than Steph Curry? I think he just undercuts his whole point here.
Yeah, I think when you look at Steph Curry is going to come out and be a beast. He's going to be lighting it up.
Back-to-back MVP.
It is blasphemy, but it gets people to listen. It gets people to look and make people think, oh, is he? God, this is a good point. No, like Dibs said, the guy hasn't only played 2 games. And we want to say that now Dame's better. Steph Curry is unbelievable. So I still think that it's totally blasphemous. But, to get people to listen, to get people to start the conversation, to
just
get us to talk about
there.
It,
yeah. Just
look what happens. And it got people, and it got people talking.
And Steph is always a target for shade. Anytime you want to throw shade at somebody, Steph is the guy for a variety of reasons. But, you know, partly I think it's because his life is pretty cool and he doesn't have – any real mud on him. You know, he's got a good solid family, his brother, his sister, obviously his wife, who's become a celebrity of her own. He's got the 3 adorable kids. He's got the house with the picket fence. He's not out there, you know, doing things of a nefarious nature. He doesn't have any side action. He does good things for all people. So I think a lot of that plays into why some people just want to throw shade low. They want to bring down somebody who is at that level.
Yeah, and it happens. I think the one thing good about Steph Dibs, and you always talk about it, he just keeps moving. He's a guy that just, he's going to stay in his lane. He's going to do the things he does. He's going to focus in on his family, focus in on his skill, what he does for entertainment, play a little golf. So Steph's always going to be, I think, a godsend, but also just a guy who's just focused on his craft.
Yeah, it's too bad he had to make that comparison because Dame Lillard on his own, so much fun to watch right now. Doesn't have the handle that Steph does. To your point, Dibs, I think one of the reasons people are so anxious and willing to throw shade at Steph, I think it goes back to 2014-15 when the Warriors won that first championship. And you remember Charles Barkley, jump shooting team, can't win a championship. I think there's still a lot of people that maybe without even realizing it, that's how they look at the game. The Warriors and Steph Curry specifically changed the way we have to evaluate what goes on the floor at the NBA level. And I still think for some of us who've been watching the game longer, and I'm thinking about Monty, what he said last week or the week before, for some of us, there's still some resistance. Like, well, you can't win that way and he can't be that good because he's a jump shooting guard. It's wrong, but I think there's still a tendency to think that way.
Right, and I think there's also the notion of Steph being overrated because he needed Kevin Durant to come in and win two of his three titles, which, sure, they probably don't win both of those titles without Kevin Durant, but does that really devalue what Steph Curry is and does as a player? That, to me, becomes an unfair way to assess it, but that's what we do in the media, where you look at Steph with his three titles, and it's, well, he only got those two because of Kevin Durant, and, you know, he was unanimous MVP, but that's just because he was a great three-point shooter, and, you know, now everybody shoots the threes like that, so... And, you know, you look at Dame and what he does athletically, slashing to the hoop and, you know, his death-defying drives to the basket. He's an exciting player, and the recency bias wants you to think that one player is better than another guy who maybe isn't in the spotlight right now.
Yeah, yeah, let's not forget, to the point you just made, yeah, Steph Curry, back-to-back MVPs, that was before Kevin Durant even got there. I agree, they probably don't win the championships without Durant, but even before Durant got there, Steph Curry was a back-to-back MVP and a unanimous MVP. Now, Steve Kerr and Draymond Green both say, it's painful not to be in the bubble. Everything going on in the bubble, and the Warriors, of course, have been in the finals as far back as we can recall, not being in the bubble, painful for them. Dibs earlier suggested that if you're a Warrior fan and you're looking for somebody to pull for in the bubble, I think you said Miami would be a good way to go because of Iguodala, and also you want to go Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I'm more of the mind of Milwaukee, honestly. I mean, Miami
really?
With the Iguodala angle doesn't really do a lot for me. I'm a little bit, just the whole Memphis situation kind of rubs me the wrong way. I'm not going to Memphis, by the way. Yeah, I'm not even going to fly there. I'm going to go ahead and stick and stay here in the Bay, and I'll just wait for you guys to buy me out. And I know that's the system, but that one kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And, you know, Miami, I could take them or leave them. I'd like to see Milwaukee win the title because, man, maybe then Giannis looks at it as a box checked, and maybe he's more interested in maybe finding a different place to play in the future.
Yeah, been there, done that. So now what's next? I won my championship in Milwaukee. Like, I forget the name of the guy that Lowe likes, that the guy with the really gray beard, the guy who did that in Cleveland, and then he left.
What a hater. What a hater. You guys are such haters. Here's the thing. Do you think that Steve Kerr and Draymond Dibs are just saying what people want to hear? God, it's so hard not to be in the bubble. Or you think they're like, man, we didn't, because earlier they didn't want to go. They want to rest, to get guys back in shape, the things they want to do. How much good is this just doing the whole Warriors, not just the team, but the whole organization? 5 years, five straight years of playing these extra games, playing in NBA titles. This is like a first year removed. So
right.
I think this could be a blessing.
They have a little bit of FOMO, I'm sure. Fear of missing out,
yeah.
Just not being in there. But at the same time, it's like, and Whitey, I know I'm going to speak your language here, but it's like when you're going out every night, and you go out five straight nights, and you're raging so hard, and it's just
Amen.
Like that sixth night comes, and you know, all your friends are going out to another hot club, and you know, you got VIP, and you're all going to be set up, but you know you can't
Suck
answer the bell, and so it's like, you know what, fellas, I'm out. I'm going to have to sit this one out, and so you sit it out, and you're sitting at home watching Love Boat and Fantasy Island back-to-back, and you realize, man, I wish I could be there. And they start sending you pictures from inside the bubble or inside the club, the clubble, for the sake of this analogy.
Yeah.
And you're sitting at home, low, and you know you need a night off. You know you need the rest because you've gone hard five straight nights. So you know you made the right decision, but you still can't help but feel like you should be there. And that's, I think, where the Warriors are right now.
Wow, that's a great analogy. But you could always shower and throw in some clothes dibs and get up in that club and say, holla.
Yeah. You can find me in the clubble. 50 Cent. No, but in this case, you know, they're not invited. So, yeah.
Why do you think the basketball in the bubble has been as compelling as it's been? Would you agree? Can we agree that it's been better than we had any reason to expect that it would be in terms of competitive games and players playing well and playing hard? I know there's been a little sloppiness, but I think bubble ball has been tremendous.
Haven't been that interested in it, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Because the standings are all set. And you made the point earlier when you were trying to troll Lowe about the Lakers. What do they have to play for now?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, you had Jared Dudley on the floor yesterday getting minutes. I didn't even know he was still in the NBA, let alone on the Lakers. And one of the various Antetokounmpos got minutes for the Lakers as well.
Right.
Not Giannis, not Thionis, and it might have been Gianna Suter, Gianna Franco Antetokounmpo.
Wow.
But, I mean, you got LeBron played 30 minutes. They don't care. They shot 5 of 37 from 3. They're just hoisting it at the rim. So I know in general the games have been compelling, and I'm glad basketball's back. It hasn't really gotten to me yet. I haven't been bitten by the bubble bug.
And he's right. He's right, Righty, when you're talking about the bubble bug, what happened to the bubble. And it has been, but, you know, in war, what is it? You know, absolutely nothing, because they already got it clinched. They already got it clinched up. So the Lakers didn't mean nothing to them. So I think that's what Dibs keeps telling you about, and we're talking about, alluding to the teams that already clinched and got their position. Right now, they're just farting around. They're playing around. They're messing around. It's going to be sloppy. They don't want to show things, and you know, they have more practice time. So they're not going to really push it. So you aren't going to get a great product out there right now.
Well, I'm surprised that the basketball's been as entertaining as it's been. Yesterday I had on, I think it was Philly and the Wizards, and even that was a pretty good game. Philly pulled away. Looking at the matchups and what ABC and ESPN would love to have in the finals, obviously Bucks-Lakers is number one, right? What are some other matchups that you think would be great for ABC? I mean, this probably isn't going to happen, but can you imagine if we had the Mavs and the Sixers, how exciting that would be, how entertaining that would be with those young stars playing in the finals?
Yeah, I think Clippers-Raptors would be the second most exciting matchup. You get Raptors trying to go back-to-back against Kawhi trying to join the rare club of a player to have won titles with three different teams. There's only two players in the history of the association, as we go around the association, who have won titles with three different franchises, Whitey.
Mm-hmm. Dibs.
Kareem?
Whitey.
No. Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
Green.
No, it's Robert Ori and somebody?
Yes. Yeah. And
say his name.
That girl.
Say his
John
name.
Sally.
John Sally. Sally.
That, yeah, that girl.
I've only Sally. Missed that question. That like the last six times you've asked me that, for some
every
reason,
time.
I think it's,
yeah.
Yeah, Ori, there's a mental block there about Robert Ori. How are the Raptors doing this? The Raptors won the championship last year, and they had Kawhi Leonard, who was, for a while, the greatest player on the planet, and then he leaves. And yet, here they are, still knocking on that door. How is that happening?
They're knocking because they're still competitive. They're knocking because they got guys
but
that still believe
Kawhi.
That they're...
they don't have Kawhi Leonard.
But if you look at their team last year, too, I mean, you saw guys step up and make plays. It wasn't just all Kawhi. You know, of course, he was the focal point of that team. But when he would go out, the team would still hold it down. So you look at it, and I don't know which one would you guys be more happy to see? Was it the Bucks and in L.A. Clippers, or the Bucks and the Lakers, or like you just alluded to, Dibs, Toronto and the Clippers? I think that I would be more, if I got that matchup, I think it would have unbelievable ratings too. If you look at Toronto, because they're defending champs and playing against Kawhi, I think that you would have unbelievable ratings as well.
I think you would, but ultimately it comes down to market size, and I don't know how many like neutral Americans, as we explore neutral America, how many would be really that interested in Toronto? Last year, the ratings in the NBA Finals, I don't think were the greatest, in part because you had Warrior fatigue, but also because you had Toronto and Canada involved.
Yeah. I would love to see LeBron against Giannis. I think that would be a reward for basketball fans, for the NBA, who basketball's done such a great job putting this thing together in the bubble. It'd be a nice reward, a nice way to end the season. And I think one of the reasons basketball has looked so good in the bubble is because players like LeBron and Giannis have come and set the tone. It's not only them, but for the great players to come in. And I know last night was a game the Lakers didn't need, but for LeBron to come in early in the bubble and to play as hard and set that tone, I think that's one reason why the basketball has been as compelling as it's been. Kudos to LeBron and Giannis and the superstars.
Yeah, kudos to them. But I still think that if you look at, I don't think it's about LeBron. I think that if you look at it again, it's AD. It's AD's team. And I think that more people now would want to see AD and Giannis, because Giannis and AD, that would be a hell of a matchup. I don't think it would be LeBron and like you're thinking it would be. I think it'd be more AD and the two young guys going at it. LeBron, yeah, he'll be always going to use his name, but I think those two would be more to watch.
Thank you, Lo. Thank you, Dan Dibley. Always fun hanging out with you guys. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, John Curley. Coase is going to be back with you tomorrow. Appreciate it. Coming up next, we got Bonte, Shasky, and Guru. And then tomorrow I'll be on that show hosting Jockberty. Remember that, Dibs? Remember Jockberty?
Yeah, I think I might have won a time or two. And everyone clamoring for me to take on Bonte, the young champ in weight.
Yes.
Go ahead and slow that down, pump the brakes. Let's let him stack a few hundred titles like I got. Hey, brother, he's cheating. And then you can come calling.
All right. Love to see it someday. Open invitation. No pressure invite for you, Dibs. Thanks for listening. Bonte, Shasky, Guru. Next, 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.